Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
An incredibly wise man once said, "I believe that being successful means having a balance of success stories across the many areas of your life. You can't be truly considered successful in your business life if your home life is in shambles." The wise man who wrote those words was the late Zig Ziglar. And in just a moment, you're going to hear a powerful tribute to this gifted speaker, author, motivator, and man of faith. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and for the next two Family Talk broadcasts, we're going into the archives to share with you some fond recollections of one of Dr. Dobson's dearest friends. Hillary Hinton Zig Ziglar was born on November the 6th, 1926. At the age of 17, he met the woman who would become his wife. Zig and Jean were married in 1946 and enjoyed 65 years of marriage before he passed away on November 28, 2012. They were the parents of four adult children, one of whom has passed away. The Ziglars also had seven grandchildren. Now, Dr. Dobson has featured three of Zig Ziglar's recorded presentations on his own broadcast during his four decades of ministry. He's also recorded with him in the studio on two other occasions as well. And on today's program, as well as tomorrow's broadcast, we are going to remember the legacy of the late Zig Ziglar by presenting to you one of those in-studio conversations, and this is the one that Dr. Dobson ranks as his personal favorite. Let's listen in now as Dr. Dobson gets up close and personal with Zig Ziglar on this edition of Family Talk.
Well, I'm really excited to have my friend Zig back with us today. I met Zig at a speaking engagement when we were both one of the speakers, the plenary speakers, back in 1975 in Snowmass, Colorado. But Zig, you're looking good, you're sounding strong, and I'm just delighted to have the chance to talk to you again.
I'm delighted to be here, Jim, and I feel unusually well. I've enjoyed a wonderful lifespan already, and God kind of promised me that he's going to let me have a few more years or certainly a little more time, and I'm grateful for that.
And going strong.
Absolutely. Stronger than ever.
Tell me about your very early life. It's my understanding your parents were fabulously rich, and you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth, and just everything went hunky-dory right from the beginning. Is that right?
True words were never spoken, Jim, but they weren't spoken.
I guess I didn't read carefully enough. You started out with kind of a rough road to hoe, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I was the 10th of 12 children. I asked my mom one time, why so many? And she said, well, son, where do you think I should have stopped? And I didn't think after number nine. Now you can count on that. But actually, according to the doctor, when I was 9 days old, I actually died. He didn't say the words per se, but the look on his face and the way he was shaking his head indicated that. My old grandmother took me in her arms and started praying, and in a matter of seconds, God saw fit to breathe that breath back into my life. And, you know, Christ is not named the great physician for without really good reason, and he blessed my family. My mother, you know, obviously was deeply concerned and heartbroken, but it only lasted a few seconds, apparently. Yeah. And
Now, when you were six, your father died. Or actually, one day short of
that's
being
correct.
Six.
I was just 5 years old when Dad died, and my baby sister died a few days later. So my mother really had an extraordinarily difficult time. The grief was intense, and yet she was the wisest woman, wisest person I think I've ever known, had great faith, only finished the fifth grade. But she was absolutely incredible in every way.
And she had great impact on you.
Oh, huge.
And your work
impact.
Ethic and your worldview, especially. I think I read that the Bible was really her only book. You know, I hadn't written what she really needed. So is that the case?
It's absolutely the case. And every Sunday morning and every Sunday night and every Wednesday evening, Mrs. L.S. Jones from down the street would park her car in front of the house and blow that horn, and we'd go out and get in that car, and off to church we would go. I have heard my mother quilting and singing those songs that she loved so much. I've watched her churn that milk, and she'd be singing while she was doing it. We had a big garden and three milk cows, and that was the way we really survived during the Depression. We raised lots of vegetables and had that fresh milk and butter.
Well, she was a single mother. I've talked quite a bit about that in my book, Bringing Up Boys, and one of the points that I tried to make is that a mother is really not equipped to teach a boy how to be a man. She can teach him an awful lot. She can love him. She's very, very important to him. But he's got to learn masculinity someplace else because that's not her forte. And so I've talked about getting that influence from a coach or a teacher or an uncle or a grandfather or a neighbor or somebody. Your mom had to find that kind of help for you and for the other boys in your family, and she did. It's my understanding that you had a coach that had a great impact on you.
Yes, but now that coach came along much later than those initial years. I went to work in a grocery store on Saturday before I entered the fifth grade on Monday. Mr. John R. Anderson was the owner, an outstanding Christian man. He and his wife treated me more like a son than an employee there.
You were nine at the time.
I was 9 years old at that time, and he had a huge impact on my life. I joined the Boy Scouts early on, and that was a huge impact also on my life. But Dr. Dobson and I have what I call my wall of gratitude. There are 26 men and women on that wall, and it's loaded with men and women who all had a big impact on my life. And
so you actually have that in your office?
Absolutely, on my wall there.
And who's the earliest one on
my
that
mama,
list?
My mama, of course. Yeah.
And after her?
Well, my wife comes along as number two. My oldest daughter, we taught her how to live. She taught us how to die. She had a big impact on my life. And the other one, we got the top four, was Sister Jessie, the elderly black lady who led me to Christ. Now, I'd been baptized when I was 12, gone to church probably 1,500 to 2,000 times, but I was not a Christian. She spent that July 4th weekend, 1972, at our home. She walked in talking about Christ. She walked out talking about Christ. For 3 days, that's all she talked about was Christ. I think that is the only subject she knew, but she sure knew that one.
And she got it across to you.
She
You've
sure
been
did.
Walking with the Lord all these years, haven't you?
Absolutely. It made a radical, instantaneous, dramatic change. One of the huge benefits. Now, I've always loved my wife. You know,
Her name's Jean.
That's right. When I'm talking to her, I always call her Sugar Baby. And that's exactly what she is. This had such a – I'd always loved her, always have, never loved another woman. But I loved her as much as a man can love a woman. But when I learned to love her through Christ, that's when I fell in love. And the romance is stronger today. She's more fun than ever. We talk more than ever. As the kids say, we hang out more. We do more things together. She is just a fun person to have around.
Well, you got to bring her here sometime.
I will.
I have not had the opportunity to meet her, and it would really be a pleasure to have her here. What kind of student were you in the early years?
I was a very average student, Jim. I was very, very busy working in the grocery store every afternoon after school. Milking the cows and all before I left to go to school, and then milking them when I came back in that evening. And then two nights a week, I worked delivering the Yazoo City Herald, Tuesday night and Friday night, and another night I collected. So I use the excuse that I was very, very busy. Now, I will say that being just an average student, but today and for the last 30 years, I've been a good student. I've read an average of 3 hours a day for the last 30 years.
Have you really?
Yeah. I read the newspaper every day. I read my Bible every day, and that way I know what both sides are up to.
Tell me about Coach Harris and his role in your life.
I went to Hines Junior College then. It's Hines Community College now. when I was 16 years old because I wanted to take extra math and science so I could get in the Naval Air Corps. Well, when I got there, they said, you got to take a course in history. Well, I took a course in American history under great stress. I did not want to. What possible good is it going to do me, you know? And in the first lesson, Coach Harris spent the whole time selling me on why I had to know my history. I became a history major as a result of it. Love history to this day. But he said something else that had a huge impact on my life. He said, if you have the ability to provide for more than your own needs, then you have a responsibility to reach down and lift up those who do not have that ability. Because if you don't, the day will come when they will, by force of numbers, reach up and pull you down. Well, that had a huge impact on my thinking and the work we've done in schools and prisons and the drug rehabs and places like that are a result of that. But the rest of the story is simply this. When Coach Harris was a youngster, he was a Boy Scout and had a scoutmaster named Thomas B. Abernathy. Now, Mr. Abernathy took an unusual interest in Joby. He taught him scouting, but he also became a mentor to him, had a huge impact on Joby's life. Now, Mr. Abernathy had three daughters and a son. His youngest daughter is a girl named Jean, who has been Mrs. Zig Ziglar for the last 55 years.
Isn't that incredible? I could see that coming.
Now, the only there is no way Mr. Abernathy could ever have known that the impact he was going to have on little Joby Harris would result in Coach Harris someday having such a big and positive influence on my life, making me a better man, a better husband, a better father.
Up Close and Personal with Zig is our theme today here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. We have reached the midpoint of today's broadcast. We'll hear more of this conversation in just a moment.
There's a very special gift that men and women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s have to offer the people they come in contact with.
Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
That gift is wisdom, gleaned from years of experience. It's wisdom that can encourage and build up and offer hope in troubled times. In days gone by, extended families lived together in the same house, young and old alike. People were able to get fresh perspectives just by hashing out the events of the day at the dinner table. But in today's mobile society, most of us live away from our families, and this valuable interaction between generations is lacking. If you're getting up in years, I'd urge you to find someone younger in your life that you could befriend. That frustrated young mother of a toddler down the street might love to have an older woman come by for coffee, to listen and to say, "That's normal. I remember when I felt just that way." The young man in the office down the hall needs to hear from someone older and wiser. You're doing a good job. Keep up the good work. If you're younger, seek out someone older and wiser at work or in your neighborhood or at church and ask for their advice. You'll find that wisdom is a precious gift, and sharing it benefits both the giver and the receiver.
And now here's the conclusion of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, a special tribute to the late Zig Ziglar, Up Close and Personal with Zig.
Well, let me take you back to where we were now. You were 9 years old.
Yeah.
Tell me why you were working that young. That's too young to be going off to Piggly Wiggly, which is where you work. Did you have to do that to help with the finances of the family, or did you do it for spending money?
Jim, all of us children contributed financially. The money I brought home was important. It helped put food on the table, particularly the staples. I'm talking about the sugar and the coffee and the bread and the things that, you know, you have to keep living. But the cows in our garden were tremendously helpful to us. But each one of the children made their contributions financially. We always took our money home. Our mother rationed it very carefully. She was meticulously honest and thorough. I can still see the little cloth sack. It was a small sack that she'd picked up. It formerly had tobacco in it. She would put the change, the money in that little sack, and tie it to her apron strings. That's the way she kept up with it.
What did she teach you that's been so useful to you? The cow, one of your cows ate the turnips from a lady next door had planted these turnips, and your cow ate them, and your mom made you pay for that.
That's absolutely right, and it taught me a big lesson, too. In those days, we would stake the cows out by the railroad, where they would eat the grass adjoining the railroad. Well, one day I was in a big hurry. When I'd come home for lunch, I'd move the cows. I was in a big hurry to go back and play a game of tennis, so I didn't do a good job of staking. One of the cows got loose and ate the turnip greens in the lady's yard. Well, when I got there, I apologized profusely, and I went on home. For as I was concerned, it is all over. When I got home, I'd been there a few minutes when the lady came and confronted me and my mama and told my mother what the cow had done. And so my mother asked her to estimate how many turnip greens she had eaten, how many bunches, and it, I believe, was 8 bunches. That would have been at a nickel a bunch, 40 cents. Now, I made 20 cents working every afternoon after school. So there was two days' work that went down the drain.
Was that characteristic of her to hold you to a standard?
Absolutely.
How did she handle that with 12 kids?
Well, she handled it with a lot of prayer. She taught us with Sonnets, Sermonettes, tell the truth and tell it ever, costeth what it will. For he who hides the wrong he did does the wrong thing still. And when a task is once begun, you leave it not until it's done. And be a matter great or small, you do it well or not at all. She knew dozens of those little things.
And did that come out of your childhood?
That came out of my childhood, absolutely, from the very beginning. My mother always told us, you do the right thing, you trust the Lord, you become dependable. Jim, it was just... I had one of the great advantages of any child I've ever known to have a mother like that. I have awakened many mornings into the smelling of bacon or salt meat and biscuits cooking. She had to have been up at least an hour earlier than we got up to fire up that wood stove. Many nights when I'd get up to go to the bathroom across the back porch to get there, I'd look down the hallway. My mama would be quilting there at all hours of the night. I have no idea what time it was, but she was up late and she was up early.
Boy, she is a role model for all the single mothers out there who feel like they simply can't do this, usually with many fewer kids. But they can, and they can do it well.
Yeah. Our mother taught us early on also that we didn't have to have everything that other kids had. You know, today everybody wants stuff.
Yeah,
and you see literally millions of feet of storage place in these little storage units all over the country. People put them there. They'll never see them again. They never even visit their possessions, but they work real hard to get them and put them there.
Did you feel poor?
You know, I never thought about it in that light. I knew others had more than we did, but we had food to eat. We had shelter over our heads. We had clothes to wear. We never felt underprivileged, never.
Well, when did success begin to break in on you? Because you've had a lot of it, and those beginnings obviously represented some struggle there in the early days. When did it hit?
Jim, when I first got in sales, I was intrigued with it, but I was not very successful initially. For 2.5 years, I struggled. Then a man named P.C. Merrill, one of the men who had a big impact on my life, persuaded me that I could be the national champion. Well, I didn't quite make it, but that year I finished number 2 out of 7,000 salespeople. Had a wonderful promotion. Next year was the highest paid field manager in the United States. 2 years later, the youngest divisional supervisor in the 66-year history of the company. And that came about because I was able to train and impart what I'd learned to other people.
You have been speaking about those principles that you learned ever since, Zig. Give me, in a single sentence, the message that you've been conveying all these years. What more than anything else is what you set out to say to people, both in your writings and in speaking?
Well, number one, I say to them, You've got to build everything you do on integrity, because integrity, with integrity, you do the right thing, and that means you have no guilt attached. Yeah. With integrity, you have nothing to fear because you have nothing to hide. When you take guilt and fear off your shoulders, you can go further faster. Then I say to them, you've got to believe in what you're doing, because conviction comes only from that belief. And since selling is a transference of feeling, you've got to have the right feeling about what you're doing before you can transfer it to
someone. If you don't believe it, they're not going to believe it.
Absolutely.
Huh. Well, that's true of nearly everything, isn't
it? That's right. It certainly is.
I mean, you can see in a tennis match, you see the ebb and flow of confidence in the course of that match. One wins the first set by a score of 6-1, and next set he loses by a score of 6-1. What's the difference? Same people, same atmosphere, same court, same ball, same racket. What's the difference between totally winning and totally losing? It's the ebb and flow of confidence.
And I believe a lot of times when the person wins the first set 6-1, they become a little overconfident and arrogant. And when you get to be arrogant, that's when Buster Douglas knocks out Mike Tyson. That's when the underdog wins the war.
My dad used to say to me, you know what the mother whale said to the baby whale? She said, when you get to the surface and start to blow, that's when you get harpooned. You had your own aphorisms from your mother. I had a few from my dad as well. Zig, do you still get an excitement, a rush when you stand in front of a crowd and you have a chance to influence those folks out there?
A rush like nothing else, Jim. And here's something that I think people listening might tune into. And that is, even if I've made the talk, I made a talk today I've made hundreds of times, I spent 4 hours last night getting ready for today. See, I think it's arrogance when you think you can stand up and spit it out again just because you've done it so many times.
I agree completely.
And when you prepare, you step up with a different confidence. And obviously, I do a lot of praying before I do it, and I ask for guidance and directions and God to open my eyes to give me special supernatural persuasion ability and energy that I might deliver it in a way that can be received and all.
You often speak to, what, 15,000 people or more these days?
I've spoken to as many as 75,000, but that's the biggest. And there was a rumor out that the folks had really come to hear President Bush, but I know.
You've spoken on the same platform with three presidents,
yes,
as I understand
have.
It.
Yeah. Huh. I make every talk like it's going to be the last one I will ever make, because one day I will make that last one. I go prepared. I go grateful for that privilege that I have of doing it. And today, because I do have that attachment to the Creator of the universe, I can speak with authority.
If only more of us would approach our work and our lives like that. That's an insightful reminder from the late Zig Ziglar on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. And there is more to come on our next edition of the program, as we will be featuring part two of this conversation, featuring our host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson, and his good friend Zig Ziglar. Now, we are sharing these two special programs to honor the memory of Zig Ziglar, who passed away on November 28, 2012, from complications of pneumonia. He was 86 years young. And during his life, Dr. Dobson featured him several times on his broadcasts, either by sharing one of Zig's recorded presentations or by welcoming him into the studio. Now, that is the case with the programs that we're airing today and next time here on Family Talk. And for part two of this retrospective, we will also hear from two of Zig's adult children, a couple of his daughters, reflecting on the impact their father's life had on them as well as the rest of the world. Now, we have audio for both of those programs archived on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. And while you're there, we'd also like to recommend a special resource for you. In addition to being a sought-after speaker, Zig Ziglar was also the author of more than 30 books, and the last one that he published features the fitting title, Better Than Good, Creating a Life You Can't Wait to Live. We have a link for that book on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Even nearly 5 years after his passing, Zig Ziglar's legacy continues to have an influence on people of all ages and from all walks of life. In fact, there's a conversation about Zig going on right now on our Facebook page. And you can join in when you click over to facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson. That's facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson. In addition, you can share your thoughts about today's program when you call our all-new listener feedback line. That number is toll-free, 844-823-2669. That's 844-823-2669. As you think about the spiritual legacy that you're building for your children and your grandchildren, please know how grateful we are to play a part in that process. You return the favor by playing a part in our legacy-building efforts by way of your prayers and your financial support. You can call toll-free with your tax-deductible contribution at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. Or you can make a tax-deductible donation online. Our website is absolutely secure when you go to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next time as we once again reflect on the life and ministry of the late Zig Ziglar. That's on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.